You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, a weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. This is episode number 83, Natural Language Processing, how the analysis of unstructured text data can help us. I am so excited. The leadership program of the Effective Statistician is open for enrollment again. We have only 32 slots and the first people already enrolled. And by the time this goes live, that is probably a much lower number that is still available, even if it's still available. The enrollment actually ends end of the month. And if you want to learn more about that, how to improve your influencing skills, how to have a bigger impact at work, how to make more out of your career, then go to theeffectivestatistician.com/course and there you will find all the details. This program is designed for statisticians by statisticians, and we designed it to strengthen your leadership skills so you can maximize your impact at work, even if you don't have direct reports. So this is not leadership in terms of supervisory skills. This is leadership for everybody. It's leadership without a title. And the leadership program is a mixture of webinars, podcasts, and moderated small group discussions. So it's very, very interactive, and it's focused on people in the health sector with lots of nice examples that all our students could relate to. So we believe all statisticians can be leaders if they are trained accordingly. So have a look. It would be awesome to see one of the listeners, or maybe a couple of the listeners, to this podcast in this program. It's just so much fun and so much nice learning. This podcast is created in association with PSI, a global member organization dedicated to leading and promoting best practice and industry initiatives. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Just visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. And today I'm talking to Jennings. Hi, Jennings. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. Doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Okay, very good. So let's start with a short introduction of yourself. You're working in quite a unique company, and maybe you can tell a little bit about how you came to the job that you're currently in and what your company is working on.
Sure, absolutely. So my name is Jennings Su. I'm currently a director focusing on the healthcare product at a company called Quid. So Quid is essentially an AI natural language processing company that's really seeking to understand and extract information from unstructured text data. So as Alexander mentioned, I kind of came upon this, this current position through a pretty diverse route. I was originally, very focused in the sciences. I was a biology major when I was an undergrad at Harvard. And then after that, I delved into some computational gaze fixation research for kids with autism at Yale. Then I essentially started on kind of a medicine route at Case Western Reserve University before moving to McKinsey to do consulting. But kind of through all of those experiences, what I realized is that there is such a need right now in the healthcare space across all of the different stakeholders for the ability to analyze data and to leverage the advances we've had in machine learning, in artificial intelligence, to basically help us understand that data. And so that's why I've made it to my current role here at Quid. So a few more words about Quid in particular. Essentially, we're a startup, but we've been around for about 10 years now, working with about 200 of the Fortune 500 companies. And as I mentioned, it's an AI natural language processing company. So specifically what that means is, instead of doing kind of the traditional text mining approaches to unstructured data, we're really looking to understand context and understand the relationship between different themes that we extract from the data. And as you can imagine, this is fairly industry agnostic, but healthcare is actually the sector that we've seen the greatest growth in need over the past few years, as finally a lot of the stakeholders are opening up their, you know, vast amounts of internal data that they want to be analyzed.
So in terms of text mining, why is this such an important area to actually look into?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it really comes down to the overwhelming amount of data that is really being generated and how much of that data is essentially in text format. So there was a report by the IDC a few years ago that essentially estimated, if I recall correctly, it was somewhere on the order of 175 zettabytes of data worldwide by 2025. So
what are zettabytes?
So zettabytes are essentially 1 million petabytes. And petabyte is already 1,000 gigabytes. So you can imagine essentially, you know, a zettabyte, in other words, is 1 billion gigabytes for those of you who understand gigabytes. So with the rise of that much data, the challenge, of course, is how can you meaningfully use all of that data? Right. And I think it's interesting because, you know, traditionally the field of AI, it's fascinating if you look at the history of AI, because originally, the pioneers in AI started by wanting to look at text data because everybody kind of understood that, text data is just, it's so slow for humans to process and to understand. And wouldn't it be great if, you know, we could have a machine basically read the text for us? So that core idea really dates back to the very beginnings of AI. But the problem is it was very quickly understood that computationally it's very challenging, right, to process a lot of text data. And so that's why, you know, if you think about the last 10 years or so, a lot of the advances about, let's say, 10 years ago, were really in understanding the digital data from the quantitative perspective. So that was saying, you know, can we do advanced modeling? Can we take structured data, which is data that's already present in predefined fields, and build out those relationships? And it's really only in the last 2 to 3 years that the rise of text data and again, natural language processing has really kind of even outstripped that growth in quantitative data modeling. And that's because we're finally at a place where we can use, some advanced techniques like, neural nets and deep learning in general to tap into, all of that unstructured text data in a way that computationally was not feasible in the past.
Yeah, I see that lots of data that we generate across is text data, be it on social media or even kind of, if you think about videos, lots of these come with text data, or you can easily transcribe the audio files into text data. So there's an endless stream in terms of generating text data, also internally, if you think about emails, if you think about short messages, if you think about notes that people put into systems like medical science liaisons that are out in the field, or people that sit at the medical information call centers who enter data from the customers there, or you could even record the calls there and then transcribe them and use them as source data. So there's lots of different areas where text data is generated on an ongoing basis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other interesting thing about this is that I forgot to mention in that figure of 175 zettabytes, they also estimated that 80 to 90% of that would essentially be unstructured text data. Because as you pointed out, right, there are so many different ways that we essentially digitally communicate now. And, you know, we're not, you know, machines, right? We don't communicate using, you know, ones and zeros. We communicate using language. We communicate using, you know, vast amounts of unstructured data. And the other really interesting thing that's emerging in the last year or so is the approach towards multimodal capture of this data and integrating the multimodal approaches together. So, for example, Facebook recently announced that, you know, they were looking at kind of the challenges of integrating the unstructured data that comes from voice along with, let's say, email messages, along with, essentially any other modes of communication that they're able to capture on their platform.
So modes, you mean different, like text and voice and video and these kind of things?
Yes, correct. Because traditionally the techniques to analyze each of them have been slightly different. And it's been a challenge to integrate the data that you're getting, the analysis that you're getting from the voice analysis with the video analysis, with the email. But now there's this recognition that, again, we're not living in a bubble, that we use, you know, as humans, we use all three of these channels or other channels to communicate. So there is a need for a consolidated, text engine to understand all of that.
Okay. And in terms of the specific problems in the medical field, where do you see kind of in the medical field the mm-hmm. biggest amounts of text data?
Yeah. So the medical field, has a lot of unique challenges when it comes to text data. And a lot of this is because it's because of the way that, the medical field itself tends to be quite jargonistic in a way that, you know, is not true of many other industries. When you think about, for example, electronic medical records, you know, doctors have many different ways of notating something as simple as the frequency of dosing, right? So, for example, if you want to say something, you want to take twice a day, they might write in their note twice a day. They might use an acronym like, BID. They might use another shorthand that their system they're familiar with. And because of all of these different ways of entering essentially the same content, but in different ways, it's led to a challenge for general kind of AI and general text analytics, because the general analytics platforms were essentially trained not on that specific data set. They were trained on, let's say reviews online, articles, online, even discussing health concepts. It doesn't include that content in there. And so one of the recent movements has been to try to train AI engines specifically on, scientific literature, on electronic medical record data, to try to capture, the different ways that the content is being expressed by physicians. And you can even think some of this is actually even not just a syntactic problem, but it comes down to the way that we describe our body and how you want to capture that information algorithmically. So I'll give you an example. If you think about the phrase or the word headache, right? A headache is a medical term. It describes a very specific symptom mm-hmm. that a patient may have. But there are actually many ways of describing a headache in the note. And if you're a human reading that note, you should be able to pick up on all of those different ways. So, for example, you might say, first one is patient had a headache that has lasted for about 6 hours. You might say that, patient has been having pain in their, left temporal area for 6 hours. You might say the patient has felt this constant pressure right by their ear. For the last 6 hours or so, or for half a day. And so as you see, there's just so many different ways of capturing that knowledge. And the real challenge here is that the traditional way of understanding concepts uses what we call n-grams. So n-grams is essentially a sequence of words that represent one concept. So a unigram is one word representing one concept. A bigram is two words, trigram is three words, and so on and so forth. But again, in the examples I just gave, that last one, where a patient has, pain around their left ear. So pain around the, you can drop the V, so pain around left ear. That's four words. And those four words, that quadgram, essentially is still referring to the same concept as the unigram headache. And so you can see quickly how this can become a big challenge for AI to deal with, because when you design an algorithm, you basically have to set constraints on how many words you can string together to represent one concept. And because, you know, doctors can use many different ways of describing it, and as a human, we would understand it. But as an algorithmic engine, you know, you run into a lot of computational problems.
Okay. Okay. And in general, what are other kind of concepts beyond these n-grams that you're using in terms of text mining?
Yeah, sure. So do you mean other challenges that the industry faces? The issue of emotion and sentiment within our language has been a huge research question for a while now. And there is interesting, you know, advances coming primarily actually out of Stanford that are trying to address it. But think of sarcasm. When we speak, right, oftentimes when, you know, you're communicating face-to-face, and again, in voice capture, there's good progress here, you can detect sarcasm. Largely, it's because of how we construct our sentences and the accent that we might have on specific words that are slightly out of the ordinary. And so when we have those communications in person, it's easiest for us to detect sarcasm. But when you think about it, even within pure, you know, text communications, oftentimes you can still detect sarcasm. It's not 100%. And oftentimes, you know, I'm sure, you know, all of you have heard of, you know, those, faux pas where, you know, you've texted something and you meant it sarcastically, but the other party didn't yeah. receive it as such. But largely, I would say, we are able to communicate sarcasm in those text messages because the audience understands the context in which your message was placed. And again, if there is a clear contrast between what the, you know, specific frequency of the words are, specific sequence of the words are and the intended meaning, then you can start to detect sarcasm. But for an algorithm, it's very challenging because it's already hard enough for the algorithm to understand, well, what is the, you know, quote unquote meaning of the words you've put together. But then to say, okay, well, that meaning is different than what the expected meaning is from the context. So that's still something very hard and challenging. But like I said, there have been advances in this field lately. Largely what people have been experimenting with is trying to use, again, deep learning to detect large amounts of sarcasm in online reviews, and then essentially say, you know, comparing the responses that you might type in a text against that, you know, body of literature, so to speak. And if it matches a pattern of sarcasm, they can label it as sarcasm.
Okay. Well, so basically text mining is also able to identify emotions. So for example, for a call, you could detect whether the call went well in terms of how the emotions change over time. So you know, in terms of having a problem at the beginning and being concerned to being relieved and happy at the end, for example.
Yeah, that's correct. And I do want to make a slight distinction, Alexander, for your listeners, in the difference between text mining and natural language processing. In general, you can consider them very similar concepts, but specifically for this question, I want to highlight the difference. So with text mining, you're looking at essentially the specific content of words that are in you know, your data source. So usually you're looking at frequency of distribution. You might be looking at you know, comparative metrics, you know, between one post and another, and that tends to be text mining. Versus
so things like I want to see how often, let's say, a certain treatment is used over time in different areas, and whether that increases or decreases, and how that compares, for example, with another treatment.
Correct.
And how, Okay.
Correct. Exactly. And that's very valuable, as you pointed out, because oftentimes what you want to do is you want to measure essentially the volume of conversation that has changed over time, because that might be a marker for your team to pay more attention to a specific topic. But for natural language processing, you're actually looking at the context around those words. And what they mean by context is you're trying to form relationships between the words themselves. So you want to say, phrase one, again, headache or ear pain here, is related to the other words in this paragraph usually you use a 2x2 kind of vector plot to show those relationships. And that's important because when you're looking at emotion or sentiment, you can't rely on the text mining approach. You have to rely more on the naturalistic approach at looking at the data. For example, if you have a sentence like, drug A was better than drug B, right? That sentence by itself, if you use a text mining approach, you might detect the word better. So better usually has a slightly positive sentiment. And then you detect both drug A and drug B in that sentence. So you would say, oh, well, both drug A and drug B have positive sentiment. But that's, as you and I know, obviously that's incorrect, because what you're actually trying to capture in that sentence is positive sentiment for drug A, because drug A is better than, and then negative sentiment for drug B. And so that relationship is looking at, okay, where is, drug A in relation to the word better? What is it better than? And so on and so forth. So that's where I want to say, focusing more on the naturalistic interpretation of words is key.
Okay. Are there any other such concepts that we could look into using natural language processing?
You mean similar to sentiment? Is that the question?
Yeah. Sentiment and just context and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think context and sentiment are both great examples. One recent field that has been burgeoning is trying to look at scientific literature using AI and NLP techniques and trying to uncover biases in the published data. One is biases. The other is trying to uncover essentially potentially any errors in the data that you can cross-reference against the existing body of literature. And the way that this is being done is that you're using the technology to run through, let's say, a full scientific paper. And you're looking at the way that the paper has been constructed compared to, again, your existing body or ecosystem of literature. So as you detect differences in the construction. So, for example, if you detect that this paper basically skipped an important step, or it only looked at, out of the four common groups that are looked at in this space, it only looked at two groups when doing this analysis, you're actually able to algorithmically detect that, this study is not as powerful as, some other studies, or vice versa. You might actually be able to detect that the existing literature has some biases that your new research is actually able to overcome.
Okay. Interesting. Could we also use that to basically improve communication? So I use, for example, a tool that looks into how I write and makes suggestions for improvement. Is that also natural language processing?
It is. And actually, you've highlighted the flip use case of this, which is to help construct a better paper, right? Because you can essentially turn this technique into one that shows that, in order to have the most robust study that is most likely to get through, let's say, the top reviewers at Nature or Science, then you have to have X, Y, and Z. And you're able to algorithmically extract what X, Y, and Z are from all of the papers that have been submitted in the past.
Okay, interesting. Hopefully it's not just having the right authors on the paper, but that's another topic.
Yes.
Okay, let's dig a little bit into the different data sources that we can tap into. So you just mentioned publications as a data source. So that is, I would think, abstracts and papers that are publicly available and are open access. What are other data sources to tap into?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, right, publications, especially the open publications, are a great data source for algorithms, especially with the kind of with the scientific community starting to move towards more open publications in general. And there are a lot of efforts now to try to even make some of the older publications, putting them onto an open database if possible. But in terms of other data sources, essentially think about any text data that that you have access to. So first is, as I mentioned, internal data, right? So if you're looking within hospital systems and insurance systems, it would be looking at electronic medical records. It might be looking at claims data. It might be looking at, for example, any follow-up conversations. Like if you're doing a voice capture of a doctor's call, transcribing and annotating that voice call. If you're looking, beyond that and looking at, online data, there's just a whole treasure trove of online data that's available as well. I recently published in New England Journal of Medicine Catalyst, essentially analysis of online patient conversations, together with UCB on patients who have been talking about their chronic conditions on, areas like epilepsy.com or Alzheimer's.com. Those open forums where patients are coming together to discuss the issues that they're facing in their daily life. And, it's a public open forum. There's no way that any team could actually go through and read all of the millions of posts that people put online. Mm-hmm. Or even if you did actually hire, let's say, 1 million people to read it, there's no way to eliminate the bias in what they're detecting. And so that's, again, a great example of where AI is able to play, is you leverage the same algorithm that can literally read through millions and millions of documents, documents being, patient posts online, and understand, well, what is the collective voice of those patients and what are they struggling with, and quantitatively assess, the impact that, let's say certain side effects or certain treatment modalities have on their life.
In terms of these online chats, lots of these things also happen on social media. Mm-hmm. What about that? I guess that's probably very different from social media type to one another, given what kind of easy it is to access it, isn't it?
Sorry, what was the last question?
So is it kind of the same whether you go into Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn? Is all of these easily accessible?
They're not easily accessible. Let me first caveat, right, by saying that, when we look online, we still have to, of course, respect everyone's privacy, meaning that if you are looking at this data, one is you make sure that you're looking at, open forums where, again, the stated purpose of that forum is to have a public discourse and discussion on this topic. And number two is that, we never look for essentially any personally identifiable data or any, protected health information. The idea here is not to understand and uncover specific individuals, but to understand what is a group as a whole struggling with. Mm-hmm. So the challenge is, when you go onto, for example, looking at Facebook or LinkedIn data, LinkedIn is a little bit different because, oftentimes people will post and it's meant to be a professional network, so they do post publicly on this. But it would be highly unlikely that you would find, for example, them discussing their personal health concerns on LinkedIn, whereas on Facebook they might, right? They might within a an online group in Facebook or a closed group on Facebook specifically talk about their own personal challenges. So again, we want to try to stay away from that data if it is essentially too personally identifiable, because the goal here is not to pry into people's lives; it's to look at the state of the space as a whole. So I would say that, Facebook, LinkedIn, again, we tend to stay away from, and I would say that, most groups now, most tools that are trying to understand social media also are trying to stay away from those. Twitter is a little bit different because, again, Twitter is meant to be a public ideas and exchange platform, and people often advertise their identities on Twitter. But, again, insofar as for the bulk of our analyses, we're not concerned with specific individuals. We're looking for the aggregate analysis.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess if you look, for example, into Twitter data, you would get all kind of metadata together with that, kind of, for example, when it's posted and how often it's retweeted and these kind of things, isn't it?
Yes, correct, correct. And with Twitter, again, because it's meant to be a public platform, some of that data by design from Twitter is available. Or actually, as you've mentioned, pretty much all of that metadata is available through Twitter. But, you know, for example, with Facebook, none of that information is now available unless you're actually at Facebook. But, you know, with Twitter, that's why, you know, for individuals who are posting on Twitter a lot, that is actually something that they're trying to cultivate, though, right? If you think about Twitter as a platform, it's fundamentally different than Facebook, because when you're tweeting, you are tweeting out to the general public. You are not sending a targeted message to your group of friends. And because of that, you know, again, a lot of those metrics, such as demographics, it's voluntary. You know, the author voluntarily provides those metrics. And again, you oftentimes just to boost their credibility and boost their own profile. So that's kind of in our community considered a little bit more fair game to go after. But in general, I want to stress that we're looking primarily at aggregate level data.
As you speak about community, what are kind of communities where people that are interested in natural language processing would get together? Are there any kind of specific associations or forums or groups where people can find like-minded people with common interest?
Yes, absolutely. There are actually quite a few good conferences that you can go for natural language processing. I'll actually start off by saying that Facebook hosts a really nice conference each year focused on natural language processing. And I think Google has one as well, though it's a little bit more niche. But essentially, all of the big tech companies hold their own conferences now. That being said, if you want to be kind of more academic and you're looking for kind of those more academic conferences, you probably want to look at something like the annual kind of meeting for the Association for Computational Linguistics. So it's called the ACL. So that's a big one that I know a lot of my colleagues have gone to. I think also there's one called InterSpeech, which I've had a few friends go to, which is the conference for international speech communication. So there's the international kind of conference on natural language processing, the ICNLP, which is a good one to go to. There's actually a lot of these different conferences, and I would say that it's good to go to a mix to when you're trying to build out that community, because if you go to the more tech sponsored ones, what you'll find is you'll find a lot of industry folks like myself who are trying to make progress in this field. So you see a lot of the actual practical applications of the technology versus when you go to something like the International Conference for Natural Language Processing, you'll find the top researchers presenting, you know, completely novel techniques that they're experimenting with. And so it's good to go to a mix of these and see, you know, both the practical, you know, industry applications as well as the new science that's being researched.
Awesome. Thanks so much. And in terms of, let's say, beginner's guide, could you recommend a book or an online resource or anything like that that would be good for, you know, people that would have like to have a first glance into this topic?
Yes, absolutely. There is one book that I absolutely love. And I'm actually trying to pull up my own iBooks list to remember the exact name of it. And it's actually open. It's open source. It was actually started when I think the author was either a PhD or a postdoc, but now I think he's a professor. But let me pull up the exact name of this book. Sorry, give me one second here. Yes, so it's called Speech and Language Processing by Daniel Jurafsky and James Martin.
Awesome. So for the listener, we'll put that into the show notes so you can easily find it. That was a really, really, really nice introduction to natural language processing, understanding kind of where it applies in the medical field. It's a couple of different concepts that we talked about, sentiments and understanding n-grams and what that means. Also, we understand now that there's a vast majority of texts that we can access, either internally or externally from the companies. And it's quite interesting that there's a lot of interest in this area. And finally, some good starting resources. So thanks so much, Jennings, for this nice interview. Do you have any kind of last comment on it?
Yeah, and thank you for having me, Alexander. As you can tell, I'm very passionate about this area and really interested in kind of seeing how it goes. I think my final comment here is just that this is still a space that's in the exploratory phase, right? When you think about the rise of AI and machine learning and deep learning in general, there's so much that's unexplored here that we just haven't, the research has not gotten there yet. The industry has not had time to implement and try out yet. So for, those of our listeners who are interested in getting involved in this space, I would say this is absolutely the right time to jump in and learn more because, we don't know, neither I nor the other industry folks here know what is, let's say, the best method or the best algorithm at pushing this forward, but neither do the academic teams, right? So I think it's only through a collaboration between kind of the cutting edge research along with, refining and giving them more data to work with that we can have through industry collaborations. That's how we'll really evolve and start to accelerate the growth in this space.
Thanks so much. Have a nice time. Bye.
Thank you, Alexander. Take care. Bye-bye.
Was created in association with PSI and thanks to Rain, who helps with this show a lot in the background. Actually, she also helps with the Effective Statistician Leadership Program, and that is for sure something you wanna have a look into. Please just go to theeffectivestatistician.com/course, and there you will find all the information about this leadership program. Of course, you will find on our homepage also all the show notes and everything, all the references from the discussion today with Jennings, which I really, really enjoyed. Thanks for listening and reach your potential, lead great science, serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.